This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. If you want a chance to win tickets for the Michigan State-Ohio State game, give us a call at our new number, 517-884-4870. That's 517-884-4870 for a chance to win tickets to the MSU-Ohio State game. Call us now to register for your chances. But right now, we're going to talk with a very special guest, a very good friend of ours from Michigan State University, former football player here, Seth Mitchell, now a prominent heavyweight boxer. So let's bring in our good friend, Seth Mitchell. Seth, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Hey, glad to have you. Now, I guess the obvious question, when's the next fight going to be?
Next fight is scheduled for November 17th. The location is not set yet, but it's November 17th. That's the next date. But this is boxing, and you know the date can change. But it's supposed to be November 17th, so I'm prepared as if I'm fighting November 17th.
Okay. Now, what about when you hear people saying that, you know, there's a lack of heavyweights and that you're basically the most prominent of the American heavyweights out there, how does that make you feel? Do you feel excited? Does that put a little pressure on you? How does that make you feel when people are saying there aren't any American heavyweights, but there are a few out there and you're one of them?
It doesn't necessarily put any pressure on me. I'd be lying if I said it didn't, you know, make me feel that I'm, you know, I'm relevant in the heavyweight picture. At the same time, you know, I know that this sport is unforgiving, so I gotta continue to go out there and you know, get better and continue to not lose and try to perfect my craft. But it feels good to be mentioned amongst the top heavyweights out there, and it is a lot of good up and coming heavyweights out there. There's a lot of great matches that can be made in the heavyweight division. But as everybody knows right now, the brothers are controlling the division. But I think there's a lot of good fights that can be made. Hopefully I'll get my opportunity sooner than later.
Yes, I mean that's the thing. There's such a lack of American heavyweights out there, and you know, the Klitschkos are just the dominant fighters in the division. Eventually, they're going to get beat. We know that sooner or later. We don't know who, but sooner or later, they're going to fall. Maybe you'll be one that'll take one of them down. Who knows if you get that chance? That's the thing in boxing. You just don't know when you get a chance at the big fights, do you? I mean, it's just no way of telling, is it?
For the most part, no. But I have a good team behind me, and you know, I have a great promotional company. And if I continue to do what I've been doing, I believe that I'll have my opportunity to fight for a title latter part of 2013. I don't think that I'm that far away. You know, again, there's still a lot that I have to improve on. For people that know me, they know I'm a constant professional. I work very hard, and I try to, you know, get better each and every day. And so, you know, 15, I'm a totally different fighter today than I was 15 months ago. And 15 months ago from now, I believe that I'll be a much better, much improved fighter. And hopefully when I get that chance, I'll be able to accomplish my dream and my goal, and that's to become heavyweight champion of the world.
Now, like you say, you're a different fighter than you were 15 months ago, and you'll probably be different more so. You can't see the visible changes, can you? What they just sort of happen as they go along, as you get better and better, and each session in boxing, you become a buddy body puncher, maybe a better delivering some of your punches. There's so much in boxing that you have to get better at, but you really can't see any specific thing, can you? Or can you see some of the more specific things that you're getting better at, or you need to get better at?
You can see it. You can feel it. It's, you know, it's the confidence aspect, just your mannerisms, you know, how you're, you know, without without having to think about certain things. They're just happening off of instincts and off of second nature. So it's certain things that you can just, you know, you can feel that you're doing things. You're thinking more without, you know, thinking. You're once you're letting your combinations go, instead of thinking about moving to the side, getting out of, you know, that firing range, you're automatically doing it. And so it's just something that you feel. You know, you can feel it, you can see it, and it feels good when you hit that, when you hit a learning curve. You know, and I've hit probably about six or seven of them during the duration of my boxing career thus far. And, you know, I definitely feel that it's been a while since I've been in the ring. This November, that'll make it almost 7 months, which is my longest layoff. At the same time, I feel that my trainer and I, Andre Hunter, we've worked on, you know, a lot of things in the gym. I believe my left by me hurting my right hand, it allowed me to, you know, work on my left hand a lot more. So my left hand, my left hook has gotten a lot better. And, you know, just little nuances of my boxing, you know, game, I think has gotten better. And I just hopefully I can see a lot of that carry over come November 17th.
Okay, we got a caller for you on the line. Dennis, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Earl?
Okay.
Hey, Seth, I've got a couple questions for you, but I want to set it up by telling you I'm probably Earl's biggest University of Michigan fan that calls this show. I wouldn't pull for state if they were playing the Taliban, but when it comes to you, I'm your number one fan. I'm really impressed with you. I couldn't be more effusive in my praise of the way you fought your last fight. You fought a big heavyweight. You took a right hand that looked like it came down from an anvil and took it. And then you answered part of my question just now. You look so smooth. Your jab was sharp. Your left hook was devastating. Your right hand, the boxing looked intuitive and natural. You really come a long way. And I was telling Earl after that fight, I thought you were top 10 then and well on your way to a championship-level fight and earning it. Can you tell us, what did you do in training to help you set down on your punches and really, you know, get your hips turned and land that punch with authority? I saw that as an improvement, as well as your overall boxing ability was really smooth. Have you stayed with the same team? Do you have a new trainer? Is it just experience? I'll hang up and listen, but I wish you continued good luck. And I've got a whole group of boxing fans here in Lansing, Spartans and Wolverines, pulling for you, Seth. So keep up the good work, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And your question, one of the things that I pride myself on the most is that I've been this January will be 6 years altogether that I've been boxing. January 8th, 1 year as an amateur, 5 years as a pro. And since day one, I've had the same team. I've had the same trainer. And we have such a great rapport. And my trainer, Andre Hunt, and my manager, Sheree Saleem. And we've added some essential parts to my team, such as Al Heyman, who's my advisor, real big fish in the boxing world. And I have my promoter, Golden Boy, and I've been with them ever since my second pro fight. But it's just, you know, me sitting down on my punches, I believe I have every trainer has to start somewhere. And hopefully my trainer and I, we can reach the top echelon of boxing together. And, you know, he's such a great trainer. He knows me. Sometimes he doesn't even have to, you know, say something. He can just give me a certain look, and I know what he's thinking. And, you know, one of the things that he focused on is meaningful punches. You know, just to let your hands go is not good enough. Sometimes you have to, you know, you have to sit down on your punches. You have to throw little touch punches to set up the kill shots. And those are things that he emphasized over and over again. And, you know, I try to be a student of the game and be very, you know, malleable and pliable. So, I don't think I know everything. And so he's been in the game. He's been a professional boxer, trainer for the last 17 years. He's been training. And I just try to take heed to his advice and stay humble and know that I got a lot to learn. I'm working very hard, but I got a lot to learn. So I just think me, you know, being a sponge, me being receptive to constructive criticism and things of that nature allows me to go out there and try to, you know, do new things and implement new things and not think that I know it all. So, you know, that's what I think my continued success my success is coming from. And I believe that I'll have continued success if I keep, you know, that mindset.
When you look at boxing and also the sport of football, when you see both those sports and you see which would you say where fans have the greatest impact? Would it be on a sport like boxing where they have more impact on what goes on in the sport, or is it a sport like football which has so many more fans? Can you gauge any way which fans has more impact on either sport?
I would have to say that fans have more of an impact on a football game because, you know, they get loud and, you know, that can draw somebody offsides, or that can, you know, not allow them to hear, you know, the quarterback's audible or anything, and then not allow them to get off to a fast start and, you know, things of that nature. But in boxing, it can help you, but it can also, if you don't know how to control your emotions, you can hear that, you know, that crowd going, and, you know, they talking about, they saying your name, mayhem or whatever, and you hear that, and so you just go balls to the wall, and then after a round or two, you're dead tired. You know what I mean? So you have to be able to control your emotions and things like that. So I think that the fan, you know, aspect can have a bigger impact on a football game versus a boxing match.
Yes, and because you know, boxing, the thing is, as you know, it's so much. Is basically what you do as an individual, whereas, of course, in football, you know, it's a team game and you have all your teammates and everybody going around. But in boxing, it's all on you.
Absolutely. It only take one shot. Mm-hmm. One shot. That's all it takes. You could be winning the whole fight. If by any chance that you happen to see the Martinez Chavez fight.
Yeah,
you know,
Chavez almost got it.
Yeah, the whole fight he got whooped. A one shot. And that's all it took for him to knock him down. And he almost, kudos to Martinez for hanging in there with a torn ligament in his knee. And he fought like a champion. But it only takes one shot. And that's my motto. That's why, you know, I'm naturally a humble person. I don't, you know, there's not a lot of bravado for me. I don't, you know, talk a lot of trash. But I'm natural that way, but especially in this sport, because it only takes one shot. If you get caught right, it can be lights out. And when you get too prideful, you know, that fall is a lot harder than if you weren't so prideful.
Yes. Do you find yourself ever in a fight? If you know you've won every round and you're being such a dominant fighter that, I think I can take off a little bit or coast a little bit. Do you find yourself ever coasting or anything like that? Or do you always try to win every single round every time you're out there? Or do you try to coast a little bit, especially if you're dominating a guy?
I mean, my motto is to win every round. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely want to win every round, because if it's a close round in my head, I give it to my opponent, and I never want to leave it in the hands of the judges. Not saying that, you know, I go out there reckless and try to get the knockout. I try to fight smart. I try to stay behind my jab and, you know, use my defense. But if I sense that I have somebody hurt, I consider myself a fairly good finisher, and that's what I try to do. But, you know, if I'm in a 12-round fight and I know for sure that I'm well ahead on the scorecards the last two rounds, I'm not saying that I wouldn't run, but I definitely, you know, I would be smart. I wouldn't go out there and get real reckless and give the opponent a opportunity to hit a home run.
Okay. Hey, that's good talking with you, Seth. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. We'll have you back on again before the fight in November. I'm glad you're healthy now, so that's really good for you. So we'll be looking for you getting back in the boxing ring real soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Always good talking to you.
Okay. Good talking to you too, Seth. Hey, talk to you later, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Seth Mitchell talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. The time is 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Congress calls it quits till November and heads home to drum up votes. Newt Gingrich bucks his party and backs Todd Akin in Missouri. Romney waits for his Clinton bump. He and the president drop in on Univision, and several swing states start to lean the president's way. I'm Neil Conan. It's Political Junkie Day. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm Scott Pohl with the weather forecast. The high today in the upper 60s, and it'll be mostly sunny. Mostly clear tonight, the low in the low 40s. Thursday's forecast, sunny with a high of 65, and sunny with a high in the upper 60s Friday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on AM 870. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. And hopefully we're going to be able to make contact, and we're going to try to make contact with Sean Respert and talk with Sean for a few minutes. He's in Minnesota, and he's one of the assistant coaches on the Minnesota Timberwolves. So hopefully we'll talk with Sean, get a hold of him, and talk a little sports with him, a little basketball with him. As you know, basketball season is right around the corner. Basketball season will be starting up pretty soon, so all of you who are basketball fans, just get ready for it, because it's upon us, the pros and the college game. I know some of you like pro basketball better than you like college, and vice versa, some of you like college basketball better than you like pro basketball. So whichever one you like, as long as you're a basketball fan, people will watch it and follow it. So if you're a lover of basketball, hopefully we'll hit on it. And let's go. We've got our good friend with us, Sean Respert. And Sean, how you doing, my man?
Good. How you doing?
Hey, doing good. Doing very good, and good that you have you with us. First thing I got to ask you is, how did you get into coaching? Because I know you've been in management for so many times. So what made you want to get into coaching?
A formal invitation. Rick Adelman, I mean, after working with him for, you know, four seasons, and I always played a role as a coach, as being able to kind of help identify a lot of the things that we were doing and translating things to the players, because I was working so closely with them. And I think ideally just because of the knowledge, you know, and the experience of as a former player, I think what I was able to bring to the table was, you know, the idea of bringing a formality and structure, a little bit better structure, I think, for most young coaches that come in. I mean, a lot of them, that, you know, come right from playing the game and really haven't had a great feel about what the business side, you know, and how they operate. So I think it was a great opportunity for me just to step right in and be able to work with these guys. And again, just kind of show immediate structure, which, you know, helps a lot of the players take it more seriously.
How much different is it from college basketball to the pro game? I always hear it's a very different. It's a totally different game. But what is it? What have you learned so much more? Working in the college players and then working with the pros.
Well, I think the first thing that I realized is pros. You have to be. You know, we have a lot of time to spend with basketball, so you know you have to be very patient, and you can be a little bit more detailed early with, you know, the type of things that you want to teach the young players. You know, maybe the thing that you have to have, I mean, I say patience and teaching and patience, and also for the player learning it. As a professional coach, maybe, you know, the one thing I take more seriously is the fact that I value when you have a true professional. You know, when we have a guy who's willing to come in and you know, look at film and do all the other things, come on time for his treatments, get to practice early, maybe stay a few minutes after. It makes you feel a lot better about working with players like that, because there's a lot of guys who just have no idea. And this, a lot of them, again, coming up through the AAU, how AAU programs have changed, this is their first real job. They have no clue on what professionalism is.
Yes, and that's something that all players have to learn. And of course, in basketball, especially at the pro level, at that game, you have to you have to adapt so much, don't you? Adapt because it's such a different game, and players, you know, you have to learn to play. A lot of times, you can't play the same way that you did in high school and in college at the pro level, can you?
One of the best things that Coach Izzo, and I've heard Coach Izzo say it too, but some of the best coaches recognize that, and they tell you a lot of times, you always need to be in a hurry, but you never need to rush. So I think you need to have urgency about things that you do and about, you know, the way that you handle yourself. You always need to make sure that you're, you know, trying to be early and on, really on time is being late in our business. But I also feel like you have to have a game plan. You have to understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish and how you intersect that with, you know, the team concept. And then it's on you to kind of be creative with when you find opportunities to, you know, really enhance your own personal achievement or your own personal accomplishments. When you have a chance to do that, then it's great. And I'm just thankful, like, with the Hall of Fame induction last weekend and all the things that have followed, I'm just thankful that I had an opportunity to really have somebody show me that early in my career.
Yes, and Judd was such a help to you. You learned so much from him at the college level. How much of the teaching that he taught you did it translate and help you in the pros?
Well, it translated to the fact that I understood through drill work. That's what's made me a successful player development coach. You know, when I started, I knew that there was a way of assessing a guy's skill set and the type of things you could do to realistically, you know, allow him to get better at a pace that's realistic. I think a lot of times, not just the player, but the coach themselves sometimes have these unrealistic goals and you know, how long it takes to see improvement in a player's game. And I think that's what I've been able to, you know, really assess that and give a real time so that the player doesn't have a false sense of security about, you know, certain things that happen. And as far as myself as a coach, I don't panic because maybe I don't see, you know, a turnaround on the amount of time that we've been putting in, you know, on certain things for the player's skill development. So I think I've had a great measurement from Coach, you know, really allowing me to come in when my freshman year, you know, really working on different parts of my game. And again, the decision when I came back to school was huge because that was like the year to just really turn it into overdrive and just let things happen. I had no restrictions. And that's all. Ultimately, you want to get a player to that point where they're just out there playing basketball and reading, reacting, and having total freedom to make the best decisions they can make.
Hey, Sean, I know you got to go. I want to thank you for joining me. You know, always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And we'll call you back again soon and when you have a little bit more time and talk a little bit more basketball with you, buddy.
Okay. And thank you. It was always great to see you guys, man. Thank you for having me back this weekend.
Okay. Thank you, Sean. Hey, we'll talk to you later, buddy. Yep. Bye-bye. And that's Sean Respert talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We've got a few cuts from Sean back when we were here with Sean during the games and during the induction week when he was inducted into the Michigan State Hall of Fame. One of them was I asked Sean about how he became such a good shooter.
Sean, when you came here, you were a big-time guy or guard coming in, and this helped make you even a better guard. It's like they started calling Michigan State Guard U for a long time.
That's right.
So how do you feel about, you know, contributing and becoming here? And what did Judd do to get you even a better guard than what you were when you came in?
Well, I think he always preached, even with his recruiting, that he had an opportunity with his knowledge, you know, and everything that he did to make you two levels better. So if you were a average high school player and you worked hard and you could follow what he was doing, you'd be a good college basketball player, you know. And if you were a good high school player, you'd be, you know, very good. I just think for me, the opportunity he gave me was all, you know, here he was with Magic and Skiles and Sam Vincent and Steve Smith, and I mean, you can continue to ramble names, and I just felt like all he did was look at one or two little things, and you know, for a kid that wasn't afraid to work, it made his magic. I think that's the ingredient that nowadays, as a coach now, that's what I feel like you can't instill in players anymore. You know, these young athletes have to want it first, because you can have the greatest program and the greatest workout drill and everything, you know, and the best play to draw up after a timeout. But if they're not willing to go out there and put in the time and the effort and discipline to really, you know, dot their I's and cross the T's, I just think it's really more difficult nowadays for guys to have some of the accomplishments that I was, you know, enabled to have early in my career.
And then we talked a little bit more about with Sean about what he's learned over his career.
When did it click for you that you had to play defense to be successful? Because, you know, just about nobody, everybody hates to play defense. They all want to shoot it. So when did it click in for you that you had to become a decent defensive player?
Well, I think in high school I was already. I mean, my coach, Mike Fusco, in high school, we prided ourselves in our program. We were a defensive program, and we had to defend. I mean, that was the one thing. I think what I got away from is the luxury of having Eric around. I think it made me, maybe my first couple years, saying, well, that was his job, you know, was to guard, and I focus on offense. So I got away from it, and then once, I think, my junior year, when the opportunity and the talks about making a career as a professional basketball player was more of a reality then, I think I knew then I had to get back to some things with proving to people that it wasn't that I couldn't do it. I just, you know, made some choices not to focus on it. And so I remember my junior, senior really kind of saying, okay, you know, yeah, Eric was still going to be responsible guarding the best perimeter player that the opposing team had. But I wanted to take pride in, if I had a chance when Eric was out, I wanted to guard that person. And if, you know, if he was guarding the best perimeter, let me guard the next best perimeter player so I could prove to people that I had an ability to do it. I just need to be more consistent about it.
And indeed he did. He became a very good, very consistent, as he would say, a defensive player. He wasn't one of the best overall playing defense, but he was good enough. He did a good, solid job playing defense. Well, I asked Sean one more thing is, what were the big lessons that he learned from Judd?
I think efficiency was probably the biggest thing. I used to hear Coach Heathco say all the time, man, we had to, you know, anybody can chuck up 25. So, I mean, what player wouldn't like to shoot 25 times a game, you know, like, but it's the type of shots you're taking. Are you getting it within the offense? Are you also getting it where you're allowing other people to have a chance to get their best shots off? I think that's when I look back and say, like, that was the most efficient basketball I played in my life, and it really helped me, you know, carry on into my early professional career. And now coaching, it's the theme I live by. You know, with the team we have now in Minnesota, I mean, we have efficient scorers now with Brandon Roy and Kirilenko and Kevin Love. You know, we got guys who can really, you know, put a lot of points on the board and don't need the basketball a lot in every possession. So I think that for me to learn that in such an early stage in my playing career, if I can get guys to learn that, to take what they taught me, you know, shooting these high percentage shots, and again, not just shooting them, but making them. You know, I prided myself in being a shot maker. I just hope that was the measurement when you say great shooters versus scorers. It's funny, people always talk about me being a scorer, and they're like, no, like Steve Smith was a great scorer, right? You know. Even with Skiles could, and Sam Vincent, those guys could make shots in different ways. But, you know, me being who I was, I wasn't going to get it a ton of different ways. So I feel like the only thing I could do is keep moving further and further back. I figure at some point they stopped coming out.
And that's Sean Respert, one of the greatest players ever to wear the green and white. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR, 355-9527, or toll free 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. You know, one thing that I've learned more and more, especially about the sport of basketball, football, you really need the coaches and everything, but in basketball, you know, if you can shoot the ball and you can, you know, you follow the rudimentaries of whatever the coach wants you to do, you can get on the court a lot. I mean, you know, it depends. You have so much more freedom in the sport of basketball than you do in football. You really do. In the sport of basketball, but people think and they're always thinking about what the coach contributes and what he does. And yes, coaches contribute, but their contribute, you know, and really in the sport of basketball, it's so much more of what the players do and what the players do. Yes, coaches help and are very big at helping them, but you know, it bottom line is it really does and it happens on what the players want to do, how they want to contribute to a game. You know, some players will shoot a bunch, even if they're not making them, they'll still shoot it. And people say, he should have taken the guy out. You know, there was a game, I saw a player go 2-for-20. I asked the player why he didn't go on. And a lot of times the coaches and the players, they both are on the same page. They're thinking that, boy, sooner or later, it's going to turn around. Sooner or later, it's going to turn around for him. And some days, it just never turns around. And you're sitting there as a fan, you're sitting there watching, say, why didn't he get that guy out of there? But you always think, the guy's going to turn around. He's going to make a few shots. It's going to be his way and his day eventually. Sometimes it never is his day, but that's that part of the sport of basketball. Some days the ball will fall for you all the time, and some days it doesn't. Well, right now, let's talk to Victor on the line. Victor, how you doing?
Earl?
Hi.
I just wanted to tell you, man, you know, you are very much appreciated. You know, it's amazing how many great guests you have on your show, man.
Well, thank you.
You know, I've been calling you for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I want to let you know it's always a pleasure to be a part of your show.
Well, thank you.
But you've given me the chance to talk to some people I never thought I would ever talk to in my whole entire life, like Lomas and the Boxers and... And I appreciate every chance that you and your producers allow me to be on your show because I hope you never retire because you're very good at what you do, and I'm very proud to be a contributor to this show.
Well, thank you, Victor. I really appreciate it.
And I really do hope I get a chance to meet you in person sometime because the pleasure would be mine. I guarantee you that.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to meet you too. So maybe one of these days you will be able to get together.
Yeah, well, if you tried to come to Lions, you'd probably miss it. You'd probably bypass it. You wouldn't be able to find it.
I'd find it.
No, you wouldn't. You'd probably miss it. You'd probably go all the way to Muskegon or the South Lions, like down there by Detroit.
Oh yeah, that's right. They do. Oh, they have the two lines. Hey, Victor.
Do you think the Tigers are going to pull it off? Or not?
I think so.
They will. I mean, they're tied right now, but, they've let us down before. I don't know.
You know.
I'm not trying to be like Mr. Negativity or nothing like that, but
well,
I don't have faith in them like I did earlier in the year.
You know, I'm sort of like you. I don't have that faith, but I'm going to stick with it to the end. I mean, I picked at the beginning of the year. I thought the Tigers would win the division, and even though it's getting down to the wire, I'm still going to hold out hope that they'll win the division by one or two games.
Okay, but listen, with their talent, don't you think at this time of the year they should have been up by 7 or 8 or 9 games? You know, I mean, they had a chance to make a run, and they're not winning games when they should. It's just like the radio announcers for Detroit, they have not been able to beat up on mediocre pitching. And, you know, that's been a disappointment for the year, all year long.
Yeah, you're right. Especially the bullpen. The starting pitching has been great. The starting pitching has been good enough to win all year long. But the bullpen has been very suspect. It's been inconsistent all year long, just like the hitting's been inconsistent.
If you got a great bullpen, like if the offense or one or the other would have done their job, Detroit would be in a lot better position than what they are right now. And I hope they pull it off, but you know what? And, I'm a Tiger fan from 68, 84, you know, going to the school of the blind and the Lansing. I've been a Tiger fan for all my life, but you know what? I just have kind of lost faith in the team, and I think a lot of people have.
Oh, they have, no doubt about that, but I'm going to stick with them. I mean, it's rare for me to stick with them. I usually would jump off, one of the first ones to jump off the bandwagon.
Well, you know, I'm jumping off the bandwagon, but I got a parachute on. I hope the wind picks me up and puts me back on it, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Hey, always a pleasure, man, and thank you very much for doing what you do.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Victor. It's always a pleasure talking to you. And we just got a email in, and it says, Earl, hey, Earl, I agree with Victor and must give you props for not only the great guests, but the fact that you let your listeners speak with the guests. I believe that makes you unique among sports talk shows. Good job, he says. And that's from Don. So thank you, Don. Appreciate the email, buddy. And let's go back to the phones. We got more people want to talk sports with us. We've got Paul on the line. Paul, how you doing?
That's amazing. A former alumni of my very school. I don't know which victory was, though. That's not what I want to talk about. Just a brief note on the Tigers. That whole division, everybody's got the scent of the other guys duffing their nostrils. It's
yes.
Darn tight right now. About a week or so ago, you had a guy on that was talking about, the topic of the day, steroids, but it was generally speaking enhancements to the play of the game.
Yes.
And about a year ago, I read a book about the Hall of Fame. The author I can't remember, but he made an interesting point that there are many things over the years that have enhanced the play of the game. The pitcher's glove, the face mask, the football helmet.
Yes.
You know, there are a new pitch.
Yes.
There are many, many, many things that can enhance the play in one way or another.
Oh, so true. Very true.
You get a headache or you have a hangover before the game and you take a couple of Motrins. Is that drug abuse?
Yeah, you know, they used to, the drug of the day used to be greenies in baseball.
Yeah, greenies.
I mean, they used to pop greenies all the time.
Jim Boughton talked about that a lot in Ball 4.
Yes. Yes, he did.
There was a guy, he did an interview on 60 Minutes years ago. He talked about an outing when he was on the mound and he had a no-hitter going and he was on acid.
Yep.
He didn't even know he had it going, and the guys in the dugout said, "Hey, man, you got a no-no going."
I think that was Doc Ellis when he had that no-no. I think it was him who was on talking about that. He pitched on acid one time.
Well, your memory is better than mine. there's so many things that can influence the play of the game.
Yes, it is.
The thing about drugs is, you know, we've got a really big bugaboo about drugs in this country.
Yes, we do.
I don't know what it is. Other countries treat their addicts much more humanely than we do ours, but I think it's because of what it is, not the fact that it influences the game so much.
You know, so it does. That's the thing. And that's probably the problem with in our country, because it does have such an influence on the game, and people don't like the games to be influenced from anything negative. They want it, we want it to be pure, like when we were growing up. And as you know, nothing can be like when we were growing up.
Well, if you want it pure enough, take away everything that's happened over the past 100 years and just, go out there and pitch with no shin guards, no cup, no face mask, nothing to quote-unquote change the game.
Right.
I mean, the DH rule has changed the game.
A lot.
And I'm no advocate of drugs. It's just that I think we need to do a better job of treating our people that are troubled with it.
Yeah. Oh, I agree with you, Paul. You're right about that. We certainly do need to do a better job with all the people that are involved in the game and the ones that want to get involved in the game. We certainly can do a better job, that's for sure.
And isn't it amazing, just one last little thing, that how even sports weaves its way into our political situation? Look at the comment that the governor of Wisconsin made the other day.
Sports is a part of the American fabric. There's no doubt about that.
Sports is an omnipresent kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah, you too. Go out and get out there and enjoy the fall colors because they're coming in.
Okie dokie.
Yep.
Hey, talk to you later, Paul.
Yeah,
bye-bye. Yeah, bye-bye. The time, 45 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
To crack down on prostitution, many police departments target the Johns. Cut off the demand, they say, and countless young people can escape the trafficking and violence of life in the sex trade. The problem? Some say that approach hurts too many of the people it sets out to save. I'm Neil Conan, targeting prostitution. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Today's high will be 68 degrees with mostly sunny skies. Mostly clear tonight, the low 42. For Thursday, sunny, the high in the mid-60s, and sunny with a high in the upper 60s expected on Friday. I'm Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you want a chance to win tickets, give us a call at our new number we have to call for you, 517-884-4870. That's 517-884-4870. If you want a chance to win tickets to the Michigan State, Ohio State football game. Once again, 517-884-4870. Let's go to the phones. We've got another caller on the line. Hello, you're on the air with us.
Hello.
Yeah,
my name is Camille. I just wanted to ask a question. I know you had Seth on earlier, and you were talking about boxing. I just wanted to ask, because I know, like, when we were growing up, I know you were saying that the heavyweights wasn't, you know, getting that much attention. And, like, right now, I don't even know who the heavyweights are.
Yes.
And so I was just wondering, do you think that, because when I was growing up, like, HBO, like, we watched the fights, like, on HBO, like, everybody saw the fight. That was you, everybody went home, like, we cleared our day to when the fights came on. But now, like, pay-per-view and things like that, do you think that that has an effect on us not being that interested in boxing and things like that now?
Yes, it has an effect because, you know, we don't get a chance to see the boxers grow as they go up. You know, sometimes you can see some of the growth on Friday night fights, but you don't really get a chance to see the growth as much on ESPN. You know, people don't follow. They have the Friday night fights on for a while. I think all the way up to you know, like October, and then it'll start again in January sometime. But people don't get a chance to follow it as much as on ESPN because, you know, at the heavyweight division, for example, there aren't that many good heavyweights, so therefore they're putting a lot of the smaller fighters on those ESPN fights, and not too many heavyweights get a chance to show what they can do as they are getting better and on the way up in the heavyweight division.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure we're not going to be seeing that pay-per-view change.
Right. No,
like
that only the big ones will get on pay-per-view, only the most popular ones.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to get your opinion on that. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. And talk to you later, Camille. And that's more sports with this right here on AM 870. Well, right now we got a few cuts we want to bring you from yesterday's press conference with Mark D'Antonio. He had several things to say. One thing he talked about was the punting and the punting situation. Nick Hill will be still returning punts, but he also has Larry Capers back there as well sometimes. So let's hear what Mark D'Antonio has to say about the punting situation.
Problem putting Le'Veon back there because I think that he's got great hands and, you know, he can make the plays and he's confident. I also don't have a problem with Nick Hill going back there. You know, you guys have been out of practice. I mean, I have Nick Hill doing a, you know, cartwheel and then catching punts. I have him getting up off the ground and spinning around three times and catching punts. I mean, he can catch punts. He's a very confident player and he won't lose his confidence. But he's got to make good decisions. I think he's got to fair catch some of those balls that he's, you know, that he's taking chances on. So we'll be okay with that. And, you know, my anticipation is that he will return as our he will be our punt returner on Saturday afternoon. But, you know, we've got to try and make it as game-like in practice and as we can and have him catch 50 punts with people running down and where he's got to make a decision. Do I fair catch this or do I catch it? What do I do? Because he is new back there and Keyshawn has been the guy the last 3 years. So, but he is a very confident player with great skills and, you know, he's an exciting player when he gets going. So, you know, when he gets that first step, he's a very exciting, quick-bodied player. So that's what we want him to do. That's why we recruited him here, to be that guy. And, you know, he's very capable. But again, I do think there has to be consequences, you know, if something happens.
And we also had to ask, and Coach D'Antonio was asked, where does Michigan State need to get better at? What part of that of the Michigan State team, which really has to show the greatest improvement after these first four games?
Well, there's obviously where we need to grow is in our passing game. I do think that we've been able to run the ball. But, you know, we're going to play against Ohio State defense. They've been traditionally tough to run the ball against. They'll bring pressure and do different things. Very well coached. Luke Fickell's the coordinator down there, and, you know, does a great job. But I would say our wide receiver position, our players with the least amount of experience has to grow. So our tailback doesn't. Tight end, our offensive line's effectively okay, can do better. And, you know, we got to catch the ball and deliver the ball, much like I said the other day. We have to advance the ball down the field through the air. But like I said, if you go out and watch that Pascal or team pass or those type of things, we can do it. We just got to do it out on the field, and that will come.
One thing Michigan State's going to have to do coming up on Saturday, and that's to defend and really do a good job on Braxton Miller.
Well, I think a number of things. First of all, physically, he's more developed. You know, he's a bigger, stronger guy than he was last year. He was a true freshman last year. I think he was playing in maybe his third game last year, maybe, as I remember, when he played against us. So he's a brand-new freshman in a system. Now he has all of last year under his belt, a spring practice, a summer practice, and four more games in a new offense under his belt. And, you know, he's a much more experienced player. He's more in control. He's seen more as a leader, I'm sure. So all those things, I think, are, you know, helping him grow as a player, and you've seen immense growth in a year. But he's a very exciting player, very, very dynamic player, and he makes him go. He's a tailback that can throw in the backfield because he can make you miss and do a lot of different things, run with power and then throw it. So he'll be a tough guy to defend.
Yes, and Braxton Miller, he does so many different things well, and that's the thing. You know, you're going to have to do a lot of things to try to stop that Ohio State quarterback because he's very good. But let's hear a little bit more about Braxton Miller and his game.
It'll be hard. You know, he's that type of guy. You know, he's a guy that's going to create loose plays, but he also has quarterback design runs that are for him. You know, certain different things that they do. You know, it's really, I don't want to talk about things schematically, but there are design runs and design passes, obviously, and then there's loose plays, and it's going to be a tough job because he's like a tailback in the backfield that can throw it. And he runs with power, and he's a spin runner, which means he'll spin on contact, and he'll juke if you settle up on him a little bit. So there's a lot of different things he does that he brings a different dynamic to the football game. The different dynamic that, for example, Everett Golston maybe didn't do as much in our Notre Dame game, he's a different type of quarterback. Where Golston may look to throw first, he may look to run first, but you just watch him. You know, we're only into Tuesday. We haven't watched every single thing on him. We tried to watch as much as we can, but, you know, there's a lot of plays to watch.
And, yes, and one thing we've got to know for sure, how good is the Michigan State defense?
I think that we have very high standards on defense here. I also think that we're playing very, very well. But with that, we can continue to play better. I think there's always room for improvement. But, you know, we need to get pressure the quarterback more. We're getting pressure on the quarterback. We got to sack him more. We got to keep him in the gate, which will be tough this week as well. But, you know, I think we're number six in the country in defense, total defense, maybe number nine in scoring, and et cetera, et cetera, and 110 in sacks. But we might have the number 13 best pass efficiency defense or something. So go figure out, how do you figure out all those stats? I don't know. So what's important? I don't know. We're very good against the run right now, but, you know, we got to live in the present. And the present is right now, what's happening right now, and what will happen on Saturday. So a lot of those things can change. But I do think we're playing well on defense. People have scored when we've turned the ball over. I don't know that anybody has driven the field on us yet, the entire field on us, and scored a touchdown. I don't think that's happened. They've scored a field goal. So playing pretty good. But, you know, we're going to be judged on every single game we're going to be judged on. So that we have a big challenge this weekend with the skill that Ohio State has, the formations, the different things that they do, the schematics of it all, the no-huddle offense. You know, it's up-tempo. They'll speed it up. They'll snap it. You know, they'll be on the ball in 10 seconds, 15 seconds. You know, so we have to be able to simulate that in practice as best we can. So there's a lot of different things that we have to look at relative to them, but be a great challenge for us.
Another great challenge is getting Andrew Maxwell to play a little bit better and throw a little bit better. And here's what Coach had to say about Andrew Maxwell.
I think when you have success, you grow confidence. This is our third marquee game out here. This is our third game that will be seen by a lot of people. So, you know, a national-type perspective game. And I think you grow with that. You're going to make some mistakes, but there's going to be some positives you take from the game as well. So he's done a great job controlling our offense and running our offense and leading our offense and being resilient and composed. Okay. Need to be a little bit more of a surgeon at times. Maybe he needs to open up his vision a little bit. But he has certain things that tell him to go certain places and certain plays, certain reads. So, he's doing fine. In terms of our wide receivers, you just got to grow. I think that however they do it. In terms of Eastern Michigan and Central, you know, Central had a big game last week. And I'd like to congratulate Dan Enos. And on the flip side of that, when you watch the film and you watch how Eastern Michigan played and schematically and what they did, you know, you have to congratulate them on how they played too, because they played as well.
And one other thing we had to ask, ask Coach Dan, Coach D'Antonio about was how you handle wins and losses. And listen to what he says and how the team has to handle those two situations.
Yeah, that's usually the way life is, isn't it? I mean, it really is. I mean, if you win, things are great. You can move on. And if you lose, people just think that it's all over. Okay. The key will be how do we respond to whether winning or losing. That will be the key. Not whether we win or lose. The key will be how do we respond to winning or losing. You know, if we win, can we continue to win? If we lose, can we win? So it'll all be about how do we handle success or how do we handle failure. And I think that's so important in the whole big scope of things. So my main concern as the head football coach here is keep our players like this. Keep our players together. Don't allow them to splinter in uncertain times. Don't allow them to splinter when things get tough. You know, keep our focus. Keep each other together. Keep pushing forward to our goals. And regardless of what happens, be there for them. Regardless of what happens, be there for them. And if we can do that, then, you know, let everything run down my shoulders and we'll be fine.
And that's the key, you know. Let them be fine, and you know they just have to take everything. That's the thing in sports, you know. You got to take the good with the bad, whether you win or lose. Somehow you've got to handle it, and that's the thing. How do you handle success? How do you handle losses? You know, because you're going to be faced with both. Nobody goes through a season. Very few people go through a season unbeaten, untied. Most teams have a few losses in their hand, and you'll have to find a way to deal with it. How good your team finishes, and how good they finish, and how good they play or don't play. Well, hey, I want to thank you all for listening today. Thank you for calling. Invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up and talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. Have yourself a very safe and pleasant evening, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.